From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm producer Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made on May 23rd, 2013, when an 80-year-old Japanese mountaineer became the oldest person to reach the summit of Mount Everest. Yuichiro Miura had scaled the mountain two times before, at age 70 and 75, but at 80, the third time proved to be the charm. Miura's story is moving, and there are dozens upon dozens of similarly inspiring stories. We could talk about Cyril Baldock, who in 2014, at age 70, became the oldest person to swim across the English Channel. Or Christopher Plummer, who became the oldest winner of an Oscar at age 82. Or a woman named Rose, who at age 100 was featured in a book and a documentary, both called Advanced Style, that seek to shatter stereotypes of senior citizens by celebrating independent, stylish women. The message? Life doesn't stop at age 60. In fact, it can get better. The number of Americans age 60 and older is projected to reach 100 million by 2060. 2015 was a tipping point for New York State. Last year was the first time in history that at least 20% of New York residents were at least 60 or older. And within the next 5 years, that number is expected to increase by 25%. It's being called the age wave. People are working longer, playing longer, and living longer, healthier lives. But is society embracing, respecting, and celebrating the aging population as well as it could or should? Erdmore Palmore is a psychiatry professor at Duke University. He said that ageism is so much a part of our culture that most people are not even aware of it. It's like the air we breathe, he said, and 80% of Americans say they have been subjected to it. So we're talking about ageism this hour on Connections, and over the past week, I've had the privilege to talk to many people in our community about their experiences with ageism, and some of them are joining us today. I should also mention that young people experience ageism as well, but this hour, we're focusing on the impact of ageism with people 60 plus. So I'd like to welcome my guests for the hour. Elizabeth Kellogg-Walker is a clinical assistant professor at the University of Rochester School of Nursing. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Dan Mulcahy is the creative director at Bush Communications and a member of Left 4 Dead, a comedy improv group for performers ages 50 plus. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Megan.
Also from Left 4 Dead, Tim Shea, a media specialist in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Miss Megan.
And on the phone is Mary Guyon.
She's
Guyon. Thank you, Mary. Mary Guyon, a clinical project manager at Trillium Health. Mary, thanks for calling in with us today. And we'd love to hear from you, listeners. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. And you can also catch us on Twitter today. Since I'm filling in for Evan, you can reach us at MMACmedia. So I'd like to start with Mary. And Mary is calling us from work at Trillium. Mary and I had the chance to talk last week about her experience with ageism on the job market. And Mary, I have to say, I was so heartbroken to hear your story and everything that you went through. And I'd love it if you could share that with our listeners.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry that you're heartbroken. It was just kind of an eye-opener for me because I left Xerox after 30 years, and I wasn't really ready to stop working. In fact, if I have my way, I'll never stop working. And I began looking for another job. And what I found was that my resume... I'm very qualified, and my resume was strong, and I would get interviews as a result of my resume and applications. But then when I would be invited in for an interview, nobody, of course, said, uh-oh, you're too old. But there was no, you know, I didn't get the job. There was no second interview. And, of course, they are not allowed legally to tell you why they didn't choose you. But several of the jobs in particular struck me as being really perfect for me. So, you know, I hope that they hired someone else who was as qualified and that they're happy with them, but it was disappointing to me. And it took a while for me to find a job.
And Mary, how did you find yourself at Trillium?
Well, actually, I did a number of contract assignments to basically to keep working, and because that was what was offered to me. But as the economy has improved and the job market has improved, I've seen more interest in me as a candidate, And Trillium is an organization, I'm really speaking for myself now and not representing Trillium, but Trillium is an organization that I have felt strongly about since its inception back in 1989 as an AIDS clinic over on South Avenue. And I have been involved over the years as a volunteer. And so I basically kind of pestered them. I'd really like to work at Trillium. Don't you have a job for me? And finally, it happened.
Persistence. Persistence is key, they say.
Well, persistence is one of my characteristics. Some people find it annoying, and other people find it.
Well, it landed you a job, so let's not call it annoying this time. There was a Frameworks Institute study, and it identified three public misconceptions about aging. And it seems that the public believes, and this is from the study, that people age 60-plus have a loss of control and that deterioration are inevitable, and that with age, individuals cannot learn, are stagnant, and are digitally incompetent. I hear people laughing. Tim's laughing on the panel. I hope people are laughing at home because this is just insulting. It says they also believe older adults' identity, skills, knowledge, and success are fixed. So, Mary, when you were going through the interview process at different companies, were you surprised by the number of times that you were told, I'm sorry, it's not a good fit, when you knew that you were a shoo-in in some cases?
Well, you know, they're not even that direct. You know, it's always, thank you for coming in. You have impressive credentials. We were happy to speak with you today, and we'll be in touch. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the story. And then you get an email or a letter that says that you're that they've chosen another candidate. They don't even say you're not a good fit. They're very, very careful because they really do not want anyone to take legal action.
Mm-hmm. And I've read that the number of times that people are taking legal action is increasing. Over the last 16 years, the number of charges filed under the Age Discrimination Employment Act by people 55 and older is climbing, and there were more than 21,000 age discrimination complaints in 2013. We couldn't mm-hmm. find a number for this year, but so that's not surprising. Mary, what advice would you give to people who are out on the job market and maybe experiencing the same type of situation that you were in?
Well, I think that, you know, all of the research supports this. Personal connections and networking is how you get jobs much more frequently than being contacted by a headhunter or responding to an opening. Because usually by the time an opening is actually advertised somewhere, the company has either exhausted its internal resources, so there's no one that they already have employed who wants the job, or they're looking for such a special skill set that they can't find it. And because if you look on any of the job boards online, Monster and so on and so forth, you'll see that overwhelmingly people that have computer specialties, are network engineers, that sort of thing, are in great demand. And I want to say in response to what you said before about the stereotype that us folks are not computer savvy, that's just not true. I'm very, very, very interested in technology, always have been, and I'm an early adopter of just about every new technology, so that's not an issue for mm-hmm. me and for a lot of people I know.
And that's something that Dan and I were talking about before the program. Dan, you said you've never experienced ageism directly, but you're always trying to stay on top of technologies and trends, and you're in marketing, so you have to in the first place.
Right.
But can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, I think there's, you know, people go on both sides of the hiring spectrum, go in with certain preconceptions. But I think that, you know, at every stage of life, there's things you have to overcome. When you're young, you have to overcome inexperience. When you're older, you have to overcome certain perceptions. And yeah, one of them is technology today. Certainly the millennial generation is certainly more conversant with social media and some of those things. So it's like Mary was saying, she's very much technology interested. I think for a lot of us, especially in marketing, have to really make sure you keep an edge and are doing and participating. I think that's one of the things that I've seen. And, you know, you just have to push yourself a little more to do some of the things that Mary was talking about. Just, you know, connect, network and do those things and be outside and out. I mean, out in a public situation where you can connect with people and talk to them about things. And just let people know that you're not alone in a room somewhere, you know. Anyway. So, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I want to open this up to our panel. And before I do, I want to sincerely apologize to Mary Rose McBride, who I completely forgot to introduce when we were going through the guest list. I'm sorry, Mary. She's here from
that's
Lifespan.
Okay. Right.
So I'd like to open this up to the entire panel. Has anyone else experienced any kind of workplace discrimination, workplace age discrimination, or anything on the job market?
I did not. Experience discrimination. However, towards the end of my career as an academic dean, I became aware of more and more colleagues around the water cooler saying, well, just how old is Liz? And I must admit, I participated also by venturing, you know, when is that administrator going to retire, or when will there be turnover, or when will be openings? And you just find that you, or I found that I was less and less willing to throw out my actual age. And yet we all look at people's resumes, we all figure out when they graduated, how old their kids are, what jobs they had. We have ballpark ideas. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't discriminated against, but I became more uncomfortable. And then at age 60, I had a heart attack. And now that made me not only vulnerable to myself and my health, but I really sensed that the powers that be above wondered whether Liz had it still. And I did opt to retire. And since then, I've been very active. I've had a part-time job at the U of R. It's permitted me to do a lot of flexible things and fun things. And 3 years ago, my husband and I moved into a beautiful bungalow at Brickstone of St. John's. And the appeal of that was to get rid of the old house that required more and more money and angst and clean out the attic, and best decision I've made in a long time. Mm-hmm. So there's multitudes of activities and this sort of thing, but I don't feel discriminated against now.
Good. Good. Well, that's a positive. We're moving into positives now here on the panel.
I think there is positive movement. I've been at Lifespan for almost 24 years, and 20 years ago we started a celebration of aging. Mm-hmm. It's a big community luncheon. We bring in a nationally known speaker who's themselves 60 or older. And since we started it to today, I can see the difference. In people's attitudes, I believe, about longer life. I think when we started it, it was like, what? Celebrate aging? And now it's just an accepted part of what we do here in Rochester.
And that's coming up.
It is coming up, March 24th, with a little promo, Henry Winkler, who's now 70. I think that what we're seeing is, with 10,000 baby boomers turning 65 every single day, we're going to see the boomers are going to help shift the attitudes about a longer life and aging. And I think it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Tim, did you want to weigh in?
I have remained at the same jobs for about 30 years, so I haven't run into any discrimination on job possibilities. The thing that Mary said about attitude, I think, applies a lot here, though. The idea that you can change attitudes, but you can't do it legally, you know. I think some of it, like the idea that you can have, for instance, sexism in Hollywood, the way women fought that was they organized their own production companies. They hired talented writers, changed the perception throughout the industry and outside the industry, too. That's a little harder to do with ageism, I think. You know? You mentioned in the beginning there, the guy who had climbed to, you know, whatever.
Oh, yes, Mount Everest.
And it's like, yeah, that changes my perception, but any other perceptual part, I felt stagnant since I wasn't able to play tackle football. So at some point, it becomes just a perceptual ability to change those attitudes. Mm-hmm. And how can we do that?
Mm-hmm. The phones are starting to ring and light up. I expected them to. I'm glad you're all calling in. Let's take a listener call now. And first up is Bud in Chilai. Go ahead, Bud.
Hello. I'm 76, so I think I fit into the category. I'm wondering if any of the correspondents there have experienced salary discrimination, because the older you get, the less they want to pay. So people then acquiesce and bargain for something lower to get the job. And it becomes an issue of diminishing returns eventually.
Okay, thanks, Bud. I'll open that up to the panel.
No, I was making the most money I ever made towards the end of my career.
Good, I have something to look forward to. Thank you. Anyone else want to weigh in on that salary discrimination?
You got a ways to go, maybe. Yeah. I think that there's a possibility that younger people are hired in place of older mm-hmm. people because the entry salaries are lower, and that, you know, has an effect on
right.
your ability to be hired
right.
as an older folk.
Mm-hmm. Right. I would agree, and when I spoke to Megan before this show, I was pointing out that the value of hiring an older worker is often overlooked in favor of what you guys are talking about, which is the ability to pay less, because in the end it's all about money, and it's difficult to put a price tag on experience, maturity, but just simple things, like by the time we get to this point in our lives, we have automobiles that work. Our children are grown and gone. We know that we can't stay up until 3 in the morning drinking beer and go to work the next morning.
Says who?
Those are the kinds of things that people have to learn the hard way, young people. Mm-hmm. And also, young people can often not control. Their children get sick. Their cars break down. A lot of things make demands on their time and interfere with their ability to meet their occupational commitments, whereas for those of us in this age group who are still working and interested in continuing to work, well, we're focused. Mm-hmm. And we bring a lot of common sense and maturity. And I know I've said maturity several times, but I watch sometimes the things that happen around me, and I think that really is not necessary. People do not need to get that excited about various things. That I have a saying. I've seen that movie before.
There have been a lot of studies that really try to debunk the myths about older workers and talk about the value of the older worker as far as, you know, being on time, maturity, having the experience, having been through numerous different crises, you know, in life. So it's just something I think we've got to get. Hiring managers, and especially people who are hiring who are younger than we are, to really realize. But right now, actually, something like 40% of our workforce is comprised of people 55 or older still. And it's an interesting statistic mm-hmm. that, and you know, something like 80% of boomers want to keep working either full or part-time past retirement age, or they want to find a fulfilling volunteer opportunity. They don't really want to go home and do nothing.
Mm-hmm. And we have Bernard in Fairport on the line with another question about workplace discrimination. Bernard.
Yeah, I just wanted to discuss a little bit, or have discussed, the attitude of someone who's older going to look for a job. Back in 2004, after I retired from the computer industry for 30 years, I went out and interviewed with a company which starts with an X out in Webster. And at the end of the interview, I decided that I didn't want to work for them. It wasn't their choice just for me to work for them. It was whether I wanted to work for them. Because I think one of the advantages we, the older, bring, you know, I've done projects all over the world. So when I go in to sit down with a company, I have a right to say, are you the right company that I want to work for? And one of the things I'm concerned about is you're older, and it is definitely a problem getting hired on one hand. On the other hand, you need to really have a positive attitude because you have 30 years of experience, and that's a big value. And if someone doesn't want to, you know, accept that value or take that value importance, you probably don't want to go to work for them. So that's just kind of my personal attitude, but I'd be interested in a comment on older people are worth hiring. It's not some kind of a problem, if you will, that we have to deal with. I'd be interested in your input. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you.
We love hiring the older worker at Lifespan.
Tell us about your volunteer program.
Well, I just lost my voice. We have a staff of about 125 at Lifespan and about 300 volunteers. Many of our volunteers are older adults themselves, and we put them into roles that are very professional. Some are ombudsmen and advocate for people living in nursing homes. They go through 36 hours of training. Others are trained to provide Medicare guidance and information about health insurance. Others lead classes, workshops about fall prevention or chronic disease self-care management. So we really like to employ and put to use all of that good experience at Lifespan. And we really highly recommend that other people do also.
Mm-hmm. I think it's, when you look at the voice of experience, intergenerationally, it becomes very hard to relate to people who are younger, older, in the sense that their experience, say, of high school isn't my experience of high school. So to speak from my experience to them as some sort of impressive deed is ludicrous. All I have to show for it is my gray hair at this point, you know. trying to relate to people who are not in your age category is incredibly hard at times. The value of shared experience doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Right. Years ago, I read Catherine Graham's memoir, Personal History, on she was the former publisher of the Washington Post, and a passage in there said that we elders should always make the point of having some younger close friends, and that we should relish being the oldest person in the social group just to keep our minds and keep our with it going. And I do have younger friends. I've traveled with them. I'm in a book club where I'm the grand dame, and
at this
I like
point
it.
In my life, all my friends mm-hmm. are younger.
I couldn't agree more. One of the benefits of continuing to work, particularly in the setting I'm in now, is that I do interact with people at just about every age group, as long as they're old enough to work. I'm going to run across them at one point or another, and it is interesting and entertaining to hear what's on their minds, to hear what they think about various things, current affairs, politics, whatever, and it's quite lively, and I feel energized by it.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about those, bridging those generational gaps, but we're late for a break, so we're going to take a short break. We're going to let Mary go. Thank you, Mary, for calling in from Trillium Health. And we'll be right back with more Connections. Mm-hmm.
I'm Evan Dawson. Coming up in our second hour, should we abandon the term classical music? I didn't say we should abandon classical music. I'm asking if the term needs to change. The New Yorker's Alex Ross says yes. He says it's boring, negative, the real definition of anti-hype. So what should we call the genre? And what would a change do for younger generations? Let's talk next hour.
And welcome back to Connections. We're talking about ageism in America today on the program. And joining us, we have Tim Shea, a member of Left 4 Dead, a comedy improv group with members age 50 plus. He's also a media specialist in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dan Mulcahy is the creative director at Bush Communications and also a member of Left 4 Dead. Mary Rose McBride is joining us from Lifespan. And Liz Kellogg-Walker is a clinical assistant professor at the University of Rochester School of Nursing, and she is joining us as well. I want to thank all of them for being here. And we are heading back to the phones. First up is Becky in Irondequoit.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell a story. I'm 28 years old, and I have a son, and I was kind of feeling stressed out and that I was like needing to figure out my life and get it together already. And I just felt like everyone around me was more successful and that I just wasn't doing it. And I went to a garage sale with my husband, and he told the man there, who I think was in his late 70s, that I was a writer, and he wanted to come meet me. So he came and told me that he told me his story, and he said that he didn't learn to read until he was 65 years old. And since then, it opened up a whole world to him, and he started writing short stories for his grandkids and is about to publish his first novel. And he was so excited and enthusiastic, and I was so just impressed, and I realized I've got time. I can calm down about my life, and I realized that there's, you know, I had this misconception that I had to figure everything out by age 30, mm-hmm. and I realized there's a whole life that I don't know what's going to happen, that I've yet to live.
Thank you, Becky. Thank you. I'll turn that over to our panelists. Any reactions?
I'm sorry. I thought she was definitely fairly young to have a midlife crisis.
Quarter life. There's a quarter life crisis now, Tim.
Okay. I don't know if there's at any point in anybody's life. I know it's certainly in mine, and that's all I can speak to. I've never felt like I've achieved what is possible, mm-hmm. you know. So I wouldn't be overly depressed about anything here, Becky. As you said, it's, you know, you got a lot to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. And she also brings up a great point. You know, every year during our celebration of aging, we honor five local older adults who were nominated as second half heroes. And one of my favorite parts of my job is going out every year and meeting them and hearing their stories. And they have amazing stories, all of them, and mm-hmm. just like this gentleman. And sometimes it just takes, you know, instead of seeing, okay, I'll do a stereotype, the older woman that's having trouble walking, that uses a walker, that's, you know, living at an assisted living facility, instead of seeing her as that person, if you sit down and talk to that woman, you learn their life history, you learn who they really are, and it's such an eye-opening experience.
Absolutely. My grandmother recently passed away. She was 100, and I never, ever looked at her as an older woman. She was always my friend, this wise woman that I could go to for anything. So I absolutely agree with you. Let's go back to the phones, and we will turn now to Carol in Rochester. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Megan. Before I get to the real reason I called, I have to say something about having younger friends. I'm now 69. At age 60, I started doing some things I had never done before theatrically and so on, and I made a lot of younger friends, and we share a mutual respect. And that's so key, you know. And one friend asked me one time, just out of the blue, because we were very comfortable with each other and he felt comfortable asking. He said, "Carol, what's it like to be old?" I said, "I don't know, because I wasn't born old. It should happen very gradually. And unless I'm grunting, getting up out of a chair, and unless someone like you asks me what it's like being old, I don't really think about it very much, especially because I find myself doing things now that I have never done before. And the main reason I'm calling is I just want to turn people on to this great place called the Oasis Center, which very coincidentally is housed in the same building that Trillium is. It's on in the old Sears building on Monroe Avenue. And they offer myriad classes to people 55 and over at very reasonable cost. Mm-hmm. I'm right now taking a yoga class and an art appreciation class, but they offer languages and computer courses and many different kinds of exercise courses, math course. I mean, everything under the sun. The catalog is fat with all of the classes that are offered, and I just wanted to let people 55 and over know about it because this has become a great resource for me. And I have to say that I was guilty myself of ageism, I guess, because before I started my classes there, I wondered, oh, is this just going to be a whole lot of old people? And yes, there's a lot of gray hair there. But when I have actually engaged in conversation with several people, these are very vibrant, alive people who are not just sitting at home. And one of the hardest things I think many of us find after our kids are all grown and gone and we're no longer working, it can be a sad existence until you find stuff to do, you know. And all of these people have purposefully gone out and found stuff to do, and they're interesting to talk to and fun to be around and have great senses of humor. So I felt sheepish because I myself was thinking, oh, geez, am I just going to be with a bunch of old people? Me, at my youthful 60s.
I agree. For the past 3 years at Brickstone, I've just made wonderful friends of people that have had adventures their whole lives and made the decision to downsize. But the activities, both sponsored by St. John's and their lives outside, what I've found is a peace of mind and a comfort of saying no to all the demands in life after the tried to be the perfect wife, the perfect mother, the perfect career person, this sort of thing. It is very comforting to say, no, I'm really not interested in that because I'm now doing exercise twice a week and going to yoga and there's a current events discussion group and my book club and this sort of thing. And I'm not feeling that I have to be all things to all people, which I must say I was feeling. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's talk about Left 4 Dead for a second. Left 4 Dead involves Tim and Carol, who just called. We're having a lot of Left 4 Dead members on the show today. And Dan, can you tell us a little bit about your group and why you formed it? Speaking of demands, here's a demand in your life that you chose to accept.
Yeah, people ask me, they say, could you find another hobby that was less scary? You know, is there any way you could, you know, I think about woodworking or something like that, where you don't walk on stage without a script. But I think that was the fun of it. That was the challenge of it. And I saw a performance at the JCC of Unleashed, by Unleashed, and I was just blown away. And I had to do what they were doing, you know, no matter what. So, yeah, I think improv in particular is a brain stretcher. And you have to think on your feet. And it's a great experience. And as Carol said, there's people of all ages doing it. We're kind of separated by our age group here. But we perform at RIT, and that's actually RIT is probably our most exciting audience from on an annual basis. You know?
Yes, that's true. They
really like
us. Last time we performed there, we went out in the audience afterwards and overheard someone saying the people behind them, when we came out on stage, said, "Oh, these are old people. Are they going to chew the food or what?" You know, at some point, I think. I fell into improv, literally fell into it. I had a serious accident many years ago. I fell off my roof. Actually, I was pushed I won't go there. And I ended up with a serious brain injury. As part of the challenge of myself in therapy, I started doing stand-up, took a couple classes. Through that, I found improv. And as Dan said, being on stage is scary, but it does keep your heart rate going. So it's like exercise for the brain and the physical body, you know?
And there's no age limit. I think when people hear about something like improv or comedy, they think, oh, it's for college kids, it's for younger people. But I've had the privilege of watching you, and you guys are some of the funniest people I've ever seen. You're invited to the Pittsburgh Comedy Festival every year. They love you. So there's no age limit on these things. And that leads me to Advanced Style. It's a book and also a documentary that will be screened on February 8th at 2 p.m. at St. John's Brickstone. And Monica Flom is joining us on the line now. She's a local fashion consultant who will be speaking at an upcoming event surrounding the film. Hi, Monica.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about Advanced Style?
Sure. It's a documentary by Ari Seth-Cohen, and he follows the lives of seven incredibly fashionable and fabulous women who are ages 65 and older, that are living in New York, and it just chronicles their lives and how they get dressed every day and a little bit about each of them. So it's a really great, uplifting movie. There's certainly some sad parts, but majority the movie is just filled with fashion and aging gracefully and beautifully, and just the common thread of all these women who are just so stylish and fashionable, even into their 70s and 80s and even 90s. So it's a really great movie.
I was able to watch a few clips before the show, and I was so surprised by just how different some of these women were, but they all had the same mission, the same goal, the same mindset. They just wanted to be themselves. And some of the things they said were, I'm allowed to be bold now, I'm old, or I've lived my whole life adhering to other things that people thought I should, and now I'm doing what I want to do. And they also had some great advice for the younger generations, and I'd like to listen to a cut from one of the clips from the film. And this is a montage of a bunch of the women who were featured in the film.
I never used to tell my age to my students, always ask me, how old are you? And I used to say, I'm between 50 and death. But now I'm very proud because it took a long time to get there. I've just become 90 years old.
Up till 80, you always lie. And after 80, you usually brag. Anybody who's in Advanced Style has the same feeling I have. As we get older, we get better.
Some people let themselves go. They say, oh, I'm old now. But my mind is not old. I think young.
There is no substitute for life experience.
Young women, you're going to be an old woman someday. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. Don't worry about getting older. Every era, it builds character.
That was my favorite.
Yeah.
Monica, so there's an event surrounding the film, and can you tell us what that will entail and how people can get involved on the 8th?
Yes, you know, it's going to be at St. John's Living, which is a really great place. I had the chance to go there a few weeks ago and get a tour, and just was blown away as to what a great environment you can live in when you do reach a certain stage in life and you're surrounded by people to be social and just keep you active and young. So it's going to be on February 8th at 2 o'clock, and they're going to screen the movie, and it's part also of the JCC Book and Film Festival, so which is really a great, you know, organization, and they're going to be screening the film, and then afterwards, I'm going to be speaking for a little bit and giving out some fashion advice and just my feelings towards the film. Maybe we'll do a few ambush makeovers, if anyone is interested, and have a little fun afterwards. So it should be a nice day.
So for those who can't make it to the event, what kind of fashion advice can you pass along through this show?
Well, I guess in the topic of ageism and growing older, you know, as we get older, we can see how life can slow down. And if you're fortunate enough to have your health, which of course is the most important thing, then why not dress, you know, how you feel? To me, you wake up as a blank canvas every morning, and how you paint yourself is a reflection of how you feel on the inside. So if you can take the time to put yourself together, that's important, and just a little bit of accessorizing or taking the time to put some makeup on or pull together your outfit is basically painting your own canvas. Mm-hmm. So I don't think at any age that should stop. You know, when you're young, as a kid, you have fun, you know, playing dress up. And then when you're in your teens and your 20s, maybe you're trying to find your signature look. And you might go through a few looks until you find that look. But I don't think at any age you should stop playing dress up and having fun and just conquering the day that lies ahead. And to me, that all starts with getting dressed in the morning. And how you're feeling on the inside is a reflection of what you're wearing on the outside.
I think we have some reactions on the panel. I don't know why you're laughing, Tim.
I was going to say, Megan, when you responded that you worry about getting older, older folks don't worry about getting older. They worry about getting younger. It's called dementia.
Well, that is a real concern.
He wrote that right here on the spot. Yeah. That's good.
I want to respond about it takes time. I used to belong to a group of women executives who would meet once a month for breakfast. And over time, we would confess to each other that we were having to get up earlier and earlier in order to make our breakfast meeting and look put together. But it is fun, and it is important. I'm looking forward to the event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Monica?
Yeah, I do say that everything in life takes hard work, right? I mean, exercising, eating well, being a good mother, being a good daughter, whatever it is, takes work. And I think getting dressed probably requires the same sort of effort. But once you do, it's reflected on the outside, or it's reflected of your mental state on the inside. You know, most people that are in this film, that are in their 70s and 80s, don't feel that old. They feel much, much younger. You know, they feel young and vital, you know, vitality and energy and all of these wonderful qualities, that's how they feel on the inside. So it's a matter of portraying it on the outside.
Have you had any people come into your events or maybe for some personal consultations and ask you about stereotypes regarding fashion for people who are older?
Well, sure. You know, I think that there's always, you know, stereotypes of old lady clothes, you know, and the truth is, society is judgmental. You know, the first thing people see is your outward appearance. And if you look, like a person who's not looking like they're trying so hard, chances are you're going to be treated in a different way. You know, I think if you are dressed and put together, I think you're going to be treated in a higher regard. You know, I always say first impressions only happen once. And the stereotype of a woman being, you know, put together with makeup and their hair done and being flighty or vain, to me, that stereotype is long gone. I think women in this film, especially, aren't flighty or vain at all. In essence, they actually are very smart, strong-willed women, and they just take a few extra steps every day to look their best. Mm-hmm. They wake up and they take time to feel good about themselves, which really propels them to feel good in all aspects of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think it's really about, you know, how do you express your life at any age? Uh-huh. How do you express who you are at any age? I have a very good friend here in Rochester, Pat Ward Baker, who's in her early 80s, and she is the most amazing dresser. And, you know, every time we're together, she's dressed, you know, way differently than I am. So, but that's the way she expresses who she is at her stage of life. You know, there's a lot of discussion we could have about this topic. You know, do you, you know, dress your age? Do you, you know, all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But really, it comes down to individual choices and who you want to be at any age or stage of life.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to limit this to just women, yeah, because there were some clips with men. I don't know if that's part of the documentary itself, but if you search online, you can find advanced style men, and they're talking about self-tanner and leopard print and their younger girlfriends. So, gentlemen, if you're listening, this is not just for women. Dan, did you... Now, speaking of self-tanner...
Yes, I got an appointment right after the show at the tanning booth. I think what Mary just said is just eyed on. There's just there's so many ways that society tries to categorize us, older, younger, men, women, all these different things. And I think both Marys here are talking about getting to your universal self, you know, this thing that you're a human being, you're still in the game, or you're not in the game. Martin Luther King said, you know, some people pass away at 30, you know, bury them till later, you know. And I think that's a really good point, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think Dan sees tanning booths as an opportunity, another opportunity to lie down.
Exactly. Put my feet up, as they say. Right?
I have to tell you, as a nurse, that they are not healthy. Oh.
There you go.
Use the makeup.
So while we're on the subject of stereotypes, let's talk about stereotypes in the media. What bothers you the most? What do you see on television or maybe on the radio that really bothers you, that you think is really unfair?
Commercials for burial insurance. it's amazing to me. You know, they're on at certain times during the day, probably when the marketing people realize that there are more older people watching. But it seems to be just geared towards, you know, scaring people into, you know, calling for an insurance settlement or, you know, an insurance agent, who are not the nicest people in the world talking about stereotypes. I think that there are a lot of things about television that I think it's the absence of older people on it that speaks to it more than the actual perceptions given, you know, put forth.
Mm-hmm. Again, though, I think it is getting a little better. Well, you see, I saw Rita Moreno in a TV show last night. She was one of our guest speakers a couple of years ago. But I think, you know, it's very difficult to, the language we use around being older, seniors, the elderly. I love when politicians say, you know, our seniors, and they're one of our seniors, you know. there's just so much that the language contributes to this topic of ageism also.
Mm-hmm. The phones are starting to light up again. Since we're running out of time, we won't be able to get to all of your calls, but we will have time for one more. And that is going to be, let me give my audio engineer Val a second. She's so busy. She's multitasking. Okay, let's hear from Louise in Rochester. Hi, Louise.
Hi. I've been listening to the show for a while now, and I find myself being incredibly disappointed in the tenor of the conversation. In a time when there are so many issues of social justice pressing against our society, that people are totally neglecting the reality that people of color are living, the aged people of color are living, still struggling against the restrictions in our society. So, you know, can one of your panelists who's a person of color speak to the kind of issues that they have to live, their reality?
Thanks, Louise. Unfortunately, we don't have anyone of color on the panel. We did reach out to several people, but they were unavailable to join us. But if anyone would like to comment, I will open it up to the group.
I think that's a subset. It's a whole other show. You know, the menu for today was for ageism, pretty broad. The fact that there aren't any people of color on the panel is not the issue, or they weren't available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, as Tim said, that is we could do an entire show on that, and we will look into doing that in the future. Today was meant to be a broad discussion on ageism in general, and I think we were able to talk about quite a few issues that really speaks to many members of our community. And I wish we had more time because we could talk about more. But before we go, I'll just remind you about the Advanced Style event. That documentary is being screened at St. John's Brickstone on February 8th at 2 o'clock. It's sponsored by the JCC of Rochester and St. John's. And also the Celebration of Aging, which is sponsored by Lifespan. That is March 24th. You can find more online. I'd like to thank our guests, Liz Kellogg-Walker, Dan Mulcahy, Tim Shea, Mary Guyon, who called in earlier, Monica Flom, thanks for calling in, and Mary Rose McBride from Lifespan. Thank you all for joining us. Evan Dawson will be back for our next hour. We're talking about rebranding classical music. Stay with us.